This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You and I have unfinished business.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Get away from her, you...
Ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
At the movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Umar Park and Ampake Park, and joining me today, Ian McNally. The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro's Academy Award winning film, is now finally opening in Malaysian cinema, so we get to talk about it, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it a while ago. Fox did a special screening for us before my interview with Guillermo del Toro.
Before you have to chin with Guillermo, yeah.
Before, just a little bit. So we've seen for a while now, but we've been saving this review until all of you can watch it.
Yeah.
Now, if you didn't know, if you missed it somehow, 13 Academy Award nominations. He won 4 Best Director, Best Picture, Best Production Design, and Best Original Score, right? It is also the first ever sci-fi fantasy movie to take this award. That's great. And you know, I'm not going to over-intellectualize it. This is a horror science fiction fantasy. Suck it, Academy.
Yes. But it's also a period piece, and the Oscars love that.
If you don't know, the story is about Eliza, who is a mute woman that works as a janitor in a secret government laboratory, and her life changes when their latest addition gets delivered, and it is this amphibian seaman.
It's basically the creature from the Black Lagoon with a slight makeover. It's very much that look, and something develops between them, and there's a monster who almost tore it all apart. It's one of those movies where it ties itself beautifully together with this lovely narration by Richard Jenkins, because it sets up, like, you know, the love and the monster and all this kind of thing, and how it all almost tore itself apart. And the monster is not the monster you're thinking of. If you've seen any Guillermo del Toro movies, you know he has more sympathies for the monster than he does for any of the people.
He always has more sympathies for any monster. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
Richard Jenkins, though, that voiceover narrative is absolutely perfect. There's something in the tone and timbre of his voice that is so comforting from the very second you watch this movie.
Yeah, the second time watching it, it's like a subtle, it's like a sledgehammer wrapped in a blanket.
We watched this movie with Bahe, and the end credits started rolling, and all three of us just went, well, we can't find anything wrong with that.
Yes.
You've seen it 3 times now.
Yeah.
I've seen it 3 times now. And there is something about this screenplay that is absolutely magical. Like, there are a bunch of screenplays that I think are quite perfect for what they are.
Yeah.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Raiders of the Lost Ark, All the President's Men.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize 2 out of those 3 are William Goldman scripts,
yeah,
but I think he writes a good screenplay.
Yeah.
And there's something about these movies where they're absolutely pristine in the story they're trying to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So with All the President's Men, it is a wonderful look at the newsroom and also at this specific moment in history.
Mm-hmm.
But The Shape of Water kind of struck home to me in that very similar way. This is a movie made by a director who knew exactly what he wanted to tell,
mm-hmm,
and told it in the most pristine way possible. The music, the characterizations, the dialogue, and even the depiction of this hideous sea creature as something lovable and worthy of your love.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, even taking away from the screenplay, there's things in there that only work visually. When you watch it repeated times, like, you pay attention a lot more to the musical numbers that run throughout. There's this constant theme of Richard Jenkins always has the TV on in his apartment because he's an artist, and he always has old-fashioned, for the time, it's 1962, I think, right?
Correct.
Baltimore. He has old-fashioned black and white musicals on TV all the time. And it's just like, nice thread running through the movie, and there's plenty of those threads,
which works also because they live above a cinema.
Yes. Where they're showing Mardi Gras and the Something of Ruth, I can never remember what it's called, but it's like they're not the movies you expect to put in the cinema when a cinephile puts a cinema in his movie.
Correct.
And the whole movie, even the watching it again, the chocolate factory fire at the beginning, there's no reason, this is at the very beginning, not a spoiler, at the very beginning there's like, oh, there's a chocolate fire, and he says, well, smell that, like burning cocoa. It's like tragedy and joy in the same breath. And it's like, you know, there's no need for any of that to be there. And there's even a shot of it burning outside. This only cost $30 million. So there's a shot. They spent some money on setting that fire up for no reason, just because that moment is nice.
Everything works as well, because, you know, nothing is out of place. That idea of happiness, joy, and tragedy is a theme that runs throughout this movie, through every character, whether it's Sally Hawkins or Octavia Spencer or Richard Jenkins or even Michael Shannon. Mm. And all of them have their moments.
Yeah.
No one is shortchanged.
It's an amazing cast, but yeah, all of them have their moments. And the lighting, I mean, it got best production design, and there's a reason for that. When you watch it multiple times as well, I mean, the first time you just think, wow, it's very green. I mean, it's very like watching Amelie the first time you watch it. It's like, wow, color grading. But the more you watch it, that moment when Michael Spielberg steps out of the shadows with the plate of meat and eggs and the light is just across his face, and then you see the reverse shot, and this lab has like hanging lanterns, you know, so each one is in different amounts of light and shade, but all of them, like individual lamps, are beautiful, and the whole lab, like, there's not, I don't think it's a, like, the whole lamp is dingy, but there's not a dingy corner of the film. Every element, even Eliza's apartment, is beautiful to look at. The walls are beautifully weathered. The couches are amazing. The way Michael Spielberg puts on his white jacket and just everything Michael Shannon does, like, it's such a singular piece of art together that it's like, when everything works, this is what you get.
There is an amazing shot just in the beginning. It's about 2 minutes long. Octavia Spencer and Sally Hawkins are sweeping the floor or cleaning the floor of a giant engine room.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you were talking about production design and lighting. And the lighting in that scene, yeah, it is one of those one perfect shot moments.
Yeah. This whole movie is one perfect shot.
Is that, yeah, right? This is a movie that is incredibly underwritten as well. Mm-hmm. There's very little exposition as to, you know, what this government laboratory is or what they're doing. I mean,
it's called Occam on the outside.
That's right.
So it's like, figure it out yourself.
Figure it out yourself, yeah, right? Which is a nice little joke. and I think that's really important when you're trying to tell this kind of story, because the primary focus really is on the sea monster, sea creature, sea god, and Sally Hawkins.
Yeah, I mean, it's a modern-day fairy tale, but it's not set in the modern day.
It's not set in the modern day, but yet in 1962 in Baltimore, in America, on the verge of going into space, on the verge of John F. Kennedy being killed.
Did they say that even that is framed in a nice way? It's like in a city by the sea and like coming towards the end of a king's reign.
It's just a beautiful description of Camelot, right? Yeah. It shows America on the verge or on the precipice of something,
yeah,
which is why I think the movie works so well in 2018, which is why I think the Academy probably responded to it so well in 2018. A lot of the 9 movies that were nominated for Best Picture were all of their time, right? Mm. So Lady Bird was set in the early 2000s in Sacramento. The Post was about Watergate. I mean, yeah, they all spoke of a time.
Except Get Out,
which speaks of this time.
Yeah.
But The Shape of Water seems to be one that kind of transcends all of that, because yeah, all of the thematic elements that exist are featured in this film. It's great.
It's... I mean, The Shape of Water is the shape of an Oscar. It's well-deserved. Everything they did was just, it's amazing.
I got really annoyed with the post-Oscar rhetoric, with all of the think pieces and op-eds suddenly coming out about how Shape of Water is a safe choice for Best Picture. Watch this movie and believe me when I tell you this is not a safe choice.
Yeah, there's a hand motion I'm doing now, which you can't see, but which I think is still in the movie, which is not a safe choice at all.
No.
And if you see the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about.
No,
and
thematically, the way the story unfurls.
I wish I'd come up with this, but I saw someone on Twitter called it Grinding Nemo. And, you know, this is going to be known as the fish sex movie. It is, but it is so much more than that, and it is very much worth seeing the cinema. And we should say that, too, that the first time we got to see this was part of a private Fox screening. And compared to something like Red Sparrow, the censorship and editing on this was exquisitely done. Like, I don't think you miss anything by watching it in Malaysian cinemas. If you had, like, you were worried about, like, giant chunks of the story missing or, you know, dodgy zooming in and out that would ruin that feeling of that best production design, it doesn't do that at all.
Like,
it still keeps it very nicely done. You use some elements, but they're not really the ones that they don't impact the story at all.
This isn't a Romeo and Juliet story. Mm. I mean, there is a certain savior element to it, because mm-hmm, she does save this creature's life.
Yeah. And I mean, we all fall in love with people who give us eggs for free.
And I think a lot of that initial reaction, that initial love, comes from maybe a savior complex.
I think we skipped over a little bit on the actors, but they are all exquisite. And this is probably one of the most Michael Shannon performances since Premium Rush, which was just another great. He is fantastic at being a horrifyingly angry man and just storming through the rest of the cast.
He's vicious.
He's
in
vicious,
this film.
But it's very entertaining to watch if you can tamp down on that, like, terror that if you ever had to deal with this person, you would just die of shock. But the performance is fantastic when he starts talking about his candy.
But here's the other thing that Guillermo del Toro does really well. Even his villains are sympathetic. Mm. So even with Michael Shannon, there's a great little monologue between Michael Shannon and the general of the army.
Nick Searcy, right?
Yes, towards the end of the film.
About decency.
About decency and about doing your job and doing it well. And you can see his motivations and why he does what he does.
And then it is just completely destroyed by what the general says. I think there's ties more into the nowness of the movie. He says, like, decency, a man has a decency not to mess up, but decency, we don't do anything with it here in America. We export it.
It makes you sympathize with the character immediately. And so it really flips the table on who is the villain.
Yeah.
And why you think of him as the villain and why he became the villain.
Picks somebody up by their bullet hole and you're like, Matt, he's a villain again.
He's a villain again. I mean, he's not a nice guy.
No.
But he's not a mustache twirling. Exactly. He's not a mustache twirling, ha ha ha, you know.
Yeah, he's the furthest you can get from that. He's a candy eating, ha 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 kind of guy.
Crunches down on those candies. Sometimes he likes to suck on them real slow. Yeah. Sometimes he crunches down.
I just love that. It was just such a nice touch as well. He's just chewing on these green-looking nasty candies all the way through the movie. It's a lovely touch.
And Guillermo del Toro kind of subverts your expectations with every single one of these characters.
Yeah. I mean, the escape that would normally happen in Mac and Me or E.T. at the end of the fourth act is like, there's a lot more to the movie beyond that.
Correct. I mean, it happens in the second act and then you've
it's
still
got... It's not spoilers,
got,
guys.
No, you know, and then you've still got a whole bunch of movie left.
Yeah.
Actually, here's a note though, and I think this is more of a plea than a note. Even if you have downloaded this movie and you've watched it by torrenting or whatever, Popcorn Time or whatever, however you watch your movies, go to the cinema and watch it because it's been brought into Malaysian cinemas. It's not often we get to see these movies in Malaysian cinemas. And so pay the 15 ringgit and watch it, because if nobody watches it in the cinemas, they're just going to be like, ah, well, we brought it in.
Yeah.
No one watched it. I guess we'll just bring in more movies with The Rock.
Yeah, and that will be it. And, you know, when you go to the cinema and it's an opening weekend for one of those big US movies, that's all there is. Like, there's no counter-programming. So it's nice the local cinemas have tried to bring in, I think, everything apart from I, Tonya and Phantom Thread has aired.
Correct.
So, you know, if you want to see more of this, you need to get out there and see it.
You need to get out there and see it. Also, I know we live in a country where censorship is rife, but like Ian said, it's very tastefully done.
Yeah.
And I guess if you've got to cut something, that's the best we can hope for, right?
Yeah. This was some of the best editing I've seen done. Like, if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't know it was there.
Fantastic. Go watch The Shape of Water. It opens in cinemas officially on the 22nd, but there are individual screenings, one screening per day until the 22nd, where it opens in wide release.
Yeah.
You can watch it exclusively at GSC, International Screens. Go check it out and let us know what you think. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
You can also tweet Bahir at Bahir Y, who really wanted to be here, but he's stuck at a meeting. But he too loves the film. So talk to us about it. Let us know what you think. This is At The Movies on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.